Welcome to the Oriented to Faith podcast. It's a podcast about LGBT sexuality and faith. My name is Tim Otto. In the conflict over LGBT inclusion in the church, I think one of the most important books out right now is Ken Wilson's very accessible A Letter to My Congregation. In it, he charts a path to peace in which LGBT people are included, but conservatives are not excluded. I got to interview Ken, and in the interview, I asked him some of the hardest questions I can think of. As part of the interview, he also defends what he calls the third way from both liberals and conservatives. And then finally, he talks about how this conflict is an opportunity. The church has always struggled with division, and if we can figure out what makes for peace in this instance, we may be able to be unified in ways that we've never imagined before. It's a provocative and challenging vision. Here's the interview. Ken, I read your book, A Letter to My Congregation, and just appreciated so much the combination of the pastoral heart and the biblical scholarship and the carefully thought through theology. And so I really appreciate you talking with me. And you've also lived out this stuff in the context of a local congregation. So
right.
I'm very eager to hear from you. Maybe we should start by you just saying a little bit about your journey with this topic of LGBT inclusion.
Yeah, well, it was a long, slow fizz rethink that began when I started meeting more people who had family members who were gay and out. The first gay people that I encountered in a pastoral context were conflicted about their sexuality. They were relating to their being gay as like an addiction or you know, like a compulsive disorder. And that's how they were presenting to me. And I just, you know, took my cues from that and from the traditional, you know, trusted authorities around me. Didn't see much, you know, what one would call progress or healing or, you know, whatever, though some people, you know, had a little bit of that story, but it didn't last for a long time. So when we brought the church back to Ann Arbor, it was maybe 2000, 2001, and more gay people were starting to be out. So more people in the congregation were in active relationship, you know, family, friends. And so that's what really got me rethinking. You know, as I read Romans 1, for example, the language of Romans 1, the tone of Romans 1, it just absolutely did not fit the people I was coming to know. And, you know, so as a pastor, you know, the tone of a text, it has to fit. And it so intuitively, early on, I was like, I think we've probably gotten this wrong. But I didn't know how, or I didn't have the confidence to, you know, kind of go up against 2,000 years of orthodoxy. So it was a slow process. If you're in the evangelical orbit at all, you know that if you cross the line on this issue, you lose your credentials, you lose your standing, you're putting your church at risk. So there's a lot of disincentive for people in the evangelical orbit, even with strong intuitions otherwise, to rethink the issue. So I understand that from personal experience. It took me a long time. It took me way too long. Looking back, I'm like, what was, you know, how could I have missed it?
But it's 2,000 years that you're of history, and so it's understandable. And you've come to a place where you've said, you know, the traditional stance is the historic Christian stance, and we ought to allow for that, but we also ought to allow for an affirming stance. And so you and others are calling that the third way. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, third way, I wouldn't exactly characterize it in that way, because third way is fully inclusive on the issue of LGBT, and that move of full inclusion is rooted in Romans 14. Where Paul is dealing with two highly contentious moral questions that are probably first order moral issues, you know, is eating meat sacrificed to idols participation in idolatry, or is dismissing the Sabbath commands of the Bible and not taking a seventh-day Sabbath, disobedience to God. You know, these are like first-order moral concerns in their time. And Paul is saying, when we're dealing with an issue like this, we cannot exclude over it. The unity of the Spirit is not contingent on our moral approval of each other. That's why I prefer not to use the term affirming, because I think the term affirming has the baggage of moral approval. You know, I affirm you, meaning, especially in a Christian context, often has the implication of, you know, we can be in unity because I extend my moral approval to you. And I think that's a mistake, where our unity in the Spirit is not contingent on giving each other moral approval. We have the approval of Jesus Christ, who earned it from, you know, by his own being and nature and morality, as it were, and we come under his wing. And so we're not in the business of giving each other moral approval. But it's a fully inclusive approach. So, you know, I think Paul in Romans 14 is really in the position of saying, you know, if you eat meat sacrificed to the idols, or if you're a Gentile that doesn't observe the Sabbath day, we will not discriminate against you. You can be a full member of the body of Christ, and you can be a leader in this church. And there would have been people on the other side that would have been shocked and scandalized by that, just like people are shocked and scandalized by gay pastors and doing gay weddings and whatnot. So practically speaking, in terms of the atmosphere of a local church that's implementing the third way fully, I think it's equivalent to open and affirming, in the sense that LGBT people are full members with no discrimination and no restrictions. So a traditionalist in that setting is absolutely free to be part of the church and to maintain their convictions. You know, in Romans 14, Paul encourages people to respect each other's convictions and not to dispute over the matters, meaning not trying to change everyone's mind, especially as the price for admission and for full fellowship in the community. But today's traditionalist or conservative on this issue is used to having all the power and the privilege. And so the conservative in a third way church has to give up that privilege and has to give up that power to make the ground rules for who can be part and who's not. And that's many, many traditionalists are not able to give up that privilege and won't go along with a third way approach, but some do, and it's a beautiful thing when it happens.
That's interesting that you put it that way. It seems like you're calling people to kind of a Christ-like submission or humility, and I'm curious about that. It seems like it would be very difficult to hang on to conservative Christians in that context, and so how do you help people have a vision for staying in the difficulty and tension of a context like that if they are traditionalists?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a pastor, it's not my goal to keep conservatives. You know, the part of evangelical that I like is the part that wants to make the gospel accessible to the outsider. And so I it's not like I have a goal to keep as many conservative Christians happy and part of the church. I think what Third Way is demanding of conservatives is a radical discipleship of Jesus. And in fact, few will follow that way. And that's been my experience, that people from conservative backgrounds really have to, they really have to get it. They have to buy into Romans 14. They have to let go of their privilege in order to follow this path. And some can do it and some can't. But, I mean, that's true of many things in conservative Christianity. How many conservative Christians are obeying the gospel commands of, you know, radical discipleship and materialism and greed and, you know, other areas of life? So the fact that it's not easy for people to do doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. You know? I think a lot a lot depends on what your fundamental posture is. What does it mean to have to preach the gospel? Who are you preaching the gospel to? Who do you want the gospel to resonate with? You know, are you trying to collect a group of people who are already, you know, in the evangelical orbit and make them happy and, you know, give them the best possible church experience they can have compared to all the other options they have? Or are you actually, you know, in a sense, fishing in the blue ocean? You're out there where the fish are, and other Christians are not trying to, you know, make the gospel accessible to these people. That's really my more missional heart as a pastor. You know, we do have conservative Christians on this issue. We have people who are. But they've come to accept having gay members of the church who are full participants and leaders and whatnot. So they've already made a kind of break sociologically with evangelicalism. I don't actually think you can go, you cannot create a church community that makes full space for LGBT people without making, at this point in time, a sociological break with evangelicalism. That's just the raw fact of the matter on the ground.
It seems like the third way is kind of straddling a difficult in-between position, because obviously you get criticism from the conservative side.
Yeah.
But then some people on the liberal side have been critical too. There was one queer theorist who said, the third way is the worst way. And I think she was saying that sexual minorities have been victimized. And because you're not taking a clear, affirming, and welcoming stance, that it's kind of perpetuating that repression that has always gone on. How would you respond to,
I'd love to
something
invite
like that?
I'd love to invite that theorist to our church, you know, and have her come and experience the church and talk to LGBT members. And then I'd love to hear what she has to say. What is she saying that I'm not saying? But I think part of it is that the evangelical church and the whole church world, in a sense, has drunk the Kool-Aid of Christianity is a new moralism. And so there isn't a concern about extending moral approval to one another as a given, you know, like it's our job to do it. I think that's a false understanding of the gospel. I have a friend who's a lesbian priest in the Episcopal Church. And she said to me, you know, Ken, I really like the third way. Because as a gay person, the affirming language sometimes feels like the people with heterosexual privilege are giving me a piece of their privilege when they affirm my relationship with my partner. But third way kind of puts us all on the same ground of like we're not going after that, you know, that moral approval from each other. That's not what it means to be a Jesus follower. So I think I get the fact that there are a lot of people who don't get third way, because fundamentally I am promoting a different understanding of the gospel than is common, you know, in modern day evangelicalism or even in the mainline for that matter. I mean, these are theological perspectives that Dietrich Bonhoeffer was working out in his book Ethics, you know, where he's talking about, you know, the original sin is eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And so the moral task is fraught from the beginning. You know, we have to ask ourselves, is there a Christian morality? You know, is there a Christian ethics, says Dietrich Bonhoeffer, because so much of the moral enterprise in Christianity is just a Christianized version of eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Whereas what Jesus is offering in contrast is eating from the tree of life, where we have an innocent relationship with God, a new innocent relationship with God. God is our parent. We are the dependent child, and we just follow God, and we don't have an independent kind of moral gauge. to tell us which way to go. So I think there are some deeper theological issues that I'm trying to unpack that can be a little bit subtle in the current, you know, controversial context of talking about the gay issue. You know?
I mean, on one level, they're subtle, but on another level, I mean, it's a faith that actually requires faith. Like, it requires a moment-by-moment dependence on the Spirit,
yeah,
rather than kind of this moralistic map that you're handed and then have to follow like a slave.
Yes. So. And I think the church is like a Gentile-dominated sociological entity right now. And the church that Paul is writing to was a Jewish Gentile enterprise, where Jews who continued to identify as Jews, who were following Torah, who had been circumcised, who were probably observing the Sabbath day, who were probably keeping kosher, came into the church as Jews. And their first experience of church was as a messianic synagogue. And then Gentiles started, you know, coming into that same assembly. And, you know, the difference in lifestyles between Jews and Gentiles on things that would be regarded by both as moral issues is incredibly diverse, you know, on so many questions. The ability of Jesus as Lord to pull that thing together without resolving all those moral differences they had, was, I think, for Paul, that was the evidence that Jesus is Lord and Caesar is not, you know. Jesus can keep this diverse Jewish-Gentile thing together by the power of sacrificial love, whereas Caesar has to keep, you know, he can keep those people together, sure, under the threat of brutal, violent force, you know. And so which is the more powerful Lord, Caesar or Jesus? So I think the whole gospel is at stake on this issue, in a sense, from Paul writing up to Romans 14 through the Romans epistle there. But this is not something you're going to get in. I mean, if you go to your standard commentaries on Romans 14 is like, no matter what people say in terms of the new perspective of Paul, you know, Romans 14 is viewed as an afterthought. I mean, even N.T. Wright, who's like one of the major voices in the new perspective of Paul, talks about Romans 14 and uses the term adiaphora to refer to the differences, you know, which is like a Greek term meaning, it comes from Stoic philosophy. It means matters of indifference. Paul was not talking about matters of indifference. He was talking about first order moral differences, and those were the kind of differences that Jewish followers of Jesus and Gentile followers of Jesus were thrashing out, you know.
It seems really interesting, the parallel you're making between that time of Jews and Gentiles coming together and the current moment that we're in.
Yeah.
And we might say that that initial coming together ultimately failed, that the church wasn't able to hang on to its Jewish congregants. And yet, it seems like you're suggesting that we kind of have a do-over at this point.
Yes.
A potential do-over.
Yeah.
Do you have any hope that we'll get it right this time?
Well, actually, the person who co-founded with me the original church that became the Ann Arbor Vineyard, that then out of that came Blue Ocean Faith Ann Arbor, is a Messianic Jew. Mm. And his name is Mark Kinzer. And he's been in dialogue with like Roman Catholic authorities. He's been, you know, part of that bigger conversation about the Roman Catholic Church making space for Judaism as a parallel and a path that needs to be respected in its own right. And, you know, he advocates for a robust Jewish expression of Messianic followers of Jesus who are, you know, keeping kosher and abiding by the Jewish Torah as best they can, and following Jesus, and not just absorbing Jewish identity into a Gentile, what is essentially a Gentile mm-hmm. culture church. I think that's what's going on in the New Testament. But But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's no evidence I've been able to unearth that an expression of Christianity in Rome actually was able successfully, at least in some kind of historical perspective that we could detect, put into practice Romans 14. So it could be that, like, now 2,000 years later, it's still waiting to be tried, you know. So yeah, as you can see, I'm there's more that floats my boat than just dealing with the gay question here, you know. I mean, if I had to choose between being, you know, traditionalist, where the LGBT people I know would be welcomed with an asterisk at best. You know, you're welcome, but I won't bless your marriage, or you're welcome, but you can't be a leader in our church, or you can't be this level of leader or that level of leader. If I had a choice between following, making that kind of church, or doing an open and affirming church, in a heartbeat, I would do an open and affirming church. I just think it would be a missed opportunity to use the pain of this controversy to actually dig deeper into the actual gospel that we all stand on, you know. And there's got to be some redemptive purpose in all the horrible anguish that the church is going through in dealing with this controversy, you know. It can't just be about the LGBT issue. It's too much pain for just that, you know. There's got to be something at the heart of the gospel that has been obscured and is not giving us the way forward, you know.
So there's a redemptive opportunity here. It's not just another occasion of division. There's something that we can learn. There's right. A way that we can be more faithful.
Right. Yeah. You know, I know lots of pastors who, at first, they're attracted to Third Way because they think it's a way to avoid the conflict at the local church level of the LGBT controversy. And it is not. It's very difficult for existing churches to transition into Third Way. It's not a way around the conflict of the gay issue. I think it's a faithful way through the conflict of the gay issue, but there will be conflict and there will be casualties and it won't be pretty and it will be painful because, you know, we're in the process of discovering the depths of the gospel in the crazy mess that we're in, you know. I think Third Way is probably, if it's being articulated at all faithfully, it's probably going to be more effective in the next controversy, you know, in terms of helping churches not divide over this, you know.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
You are welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Oriented to Faith podcast. If you haven't checked out Ken's book, I highly recommend it, A Letter to My Congregation. Also, please consider liking us on Facebook, Oriented to Faith, or on iTunes. Truthfully, this will be a very intermittent podcast, but if you subscribe, occasionally there will be new quality content. Until next time, take care and peace be with you.